Give a warm welcome to Tricky here, who is going to give you, he's been working on some really interesting stuff on the phone. He's going to take you through it in just a short session. I hope you found this inspiring. Right, thanks.
Just arrive.
I'm Tricky. I'm a creative director of a company called Tricky Business, and I'll explain a little bit more about what we do in a second. So thanks for inviting me up to Manchester. It's the first time I'm going to see my work on a big sort of cinema screen, so I'm quite excited about that. I thought it's kind of getting to that point in the afternoon where energy is probably sort of running a little bit low. So I thought we'd play a game to get you all kind of get some energy going on, get you guys involved. And I thought I'd see sort of how familiar you guys are with branding and sort of top blue chip brands that are out there. So does anyone remember the game Catchphrase on the telly? Quite a lot of people. Okay, so this is basically Catchphrase with brands. So all I want to do, I'm going to flash up an illustration. I'm not going to take responsibility for the illustrations. They're done by my sort of fellow colleague, Ben Morris. And I'm going to flash up an illustration. I just want you to say what you see. I haven't got any prizes. So if you just kind of shout out and wave your hand so I can see who's saying stuff, that'd be cool. So this is the first one. And what's the strap line from the lady there in this sort of photo? Excellent. Red Bull gives you wings. So you're shot. You know about brands. It's cool. Okay. What's the next one? What was that? Sorry.
Playboy.
No, it's not Playboy. Who is that? Excellent. Guinness. Good things come to those who wait. Okay. They get worse. Trust me, they get worse. Okay. Skittles Taste Rainbow. Excellent. Oh. It's kind of ruined the game. But yeah, Apple think different. They haven't used that strap line for probably quite a few years. That's the funny thing about sort of strap lines. Customers identify with brands and they sort of stick with you. So I'm here to talk about design, and really I guess the thing that's important for me today is that you sort of grasp where design is important in terms of software development. And I wanted to kind of explain where I feel that design fits. Have any of you been to sort of Mix or Remix and seen Bill Buxton speak? No? One person at the front, okay. So he kind of explains this quite well, and I think he explains it quite well in the sense that he sort of says, you know, if you're going to build an extension or build a house, you don't just literally start throwing down bricks. You do a bit of planning, you use an architect, you do some design. And I think in the software world, there is, you know, it's kind of been acceptable up until now to just literally start throwing down bricks and go into that sort of engineering stage straight away. And it's only in recent years with things such as the iPhone, maybe things like Windows Phone 7, that design has become much, much more important. And we work in a lot of projects to do with sort of enterprise solutions. We work with Capita on their Sims product, which is used in 85% of schools. And I think the thing to remember is even though teachers are using their software and they're using them in that sort of classroom environment, when they go home, they do use an iPhone, they do use much sort of slicker looking software. So I think design is really important, and it's really important to sort of create a brand around the product or service. Now I know a lot of you out there are probably thinking about sort of coming up with applications for Windows Phone 7. I just want to really sort of make you understand how important it is to make that a unique product or service and make it a brand. And in terms of design, this is where I think design fits. I think it fits up front. I think you kind of have this sort of research phase at the beginning of a project. You move through to conceptual design. You take a very, very iterative approach to design. That kind of sort of conceptual design is all about sketching, coming up with ideas, throwing those sketches away, having a conversation. And it's a point in the project where it doesn't sort of cost you a lot. You know, you haven't written reams and reams of code. You're not throwing away lots of IP and lots of hard work. And I think that's where you should really enjoy your mistakes. And then you sort of move into a detailed design phase, and then we get to engineering. And for me, it's really about sort of the customer, the developer and designer all working all through those. So it's not just like we get involved as designers and then go, ta-da, you know, here's where we're at. It's a process where we're all involved in that conversation. And even when we get to this point of engineering, there's lots of sort of loopbacks. So this is a picture of this is really about what we do at Tricky Business, which I think's quite unique. And this is a picture of my niece and nephew, and I think it looks like they're having a pretty cool experience. And what I really love about Nintendo, Nintendo Wii, is they've sort of changed people. They've changed paradigm of gaming by turning the camera around on the audience and really sort of making you think about the experience you're going to have with a game, rather than just focusing on the level of detail and the 3D engine in the game and all that kind of stuff. And Nintendo understand this really, really well, because if you look on Nintendo's website, you'll see lots of videos that are sent in by customers of the experiences they've had. And if you look at Lily carefully, you'll see that she isn't even playing the game. The wand's not actually in the steering wheel, but she's still having like a really fantastic experience there. So when we work on a project, as designers, we believe that it's our role to think about the customer, to walk a mile in their shoes, and to be sort of looking down that webcam, trying to, you know, see how they're going to feel when they go through the software experience that we're creating. The other thing that's sort of super unique about Tricky Business is that we work in partnerships, and we work solely in partnerships. We don't have developers on board. We're not a full-service agency. We're just designers. And for all the project, I could show you a lot of projects. I'm going to show you one demo today, really, which is our recent Windows Phone project. But on all the projects that we work on in partnership, whether that's with sort of third-party developers or actual sort of solution providers like Microsoft and like Capita. And the most important thing to remember there is, even though we might only be doing working specifically on a small part of projects, we do take full responsibility for the full project. And I think that's, you know, we really consider ourselves to be brand guardians for all of our customers and the projects that we work on. And finally, this is a drawing by a product designer called Carl Liu. And the sort of quote that comes to mind is that quantity has a quality all of its own. And I think this really captures the way that in product design, it's totally understood to do lots and lots and lots of iterations when you're approaching a design. And that's where I think we're quite different in terms of Tricky Business. We really value that sketching sort of product design iterative type approach. Okay, today I'm really here to talk to you about a project that we've worked on recently with a company called Cortexica. Has anyone heard of Cortexica? Okay, what Cortexica do, and I'll probably do them a massive injustice here because I'm not a super technical person, but they do visual search. So they have a visual search API which is very similar to Google Goggles. And what they're really focused on is making that visual search API work in a way similar to the way that the human eye works. The great thing is that it is an API, that it's out there, and I'll give you a link later on in the slides, but it's out there for people like yourselves to use. So effectively, the application that we've worked on with Cortexica, what it does is you take a picture on a Windows Phone 7 device, that picture goes up into the cloud, they do all their magic stuff, identify that picture with lots of clever technology, and then they can push some results down. And that's an API that you guys can access today. And the project that I'm going to show you in a second, the code will actually be available on Codeplex as well. So you can sort of play around with that and do your own stuff with that. So we got involved with Cortex about sort of 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were really keen to get into the Windows Phone 7 space and sort of see what we could do. So we just we were looking for opportunities to get involved, and we got introduced to Cortexica, and they had this application which they demoed last night at the Windows Phone user group. And it's a very, very simple application which basically I can identify like a logo. So you can take a picture of a logo with your phone and it will identify it. So I'll show you sort of what our process was in a second. I'm just going to run a video which I literally filmed off my iPhone last night. Let's just sort of talk you through what's happening. Okay, so this is the Logo Finder app. Like I say, it's a simple application for demo purposes, and the code will be available. So the idea is that people like you guys, you know, get this code, play around with it, and come up with lots of sort of new ideas that you can do with this technology. But what's effectively happened here is they've kind of accessed the phone, they've taken a picture of a Coke can. That Coke can is then going to be recognised, hopefully, in a second. and that will come back with some results, search results using Bing. So it's a really, really simple, sort of straightforward execution. When we sort of first met with Cortexica, this is how the application looked. So this is what I consider to be a prototype, because functionally it was working, but it didn't really have any styling or any sort of brand identity applied to it. So the first screen was the search, your kind of sort of menu screen. Then it would be a case of taking a picture, doing the search, and then coming back with some search results. But sort of true to the approach that we like to take, we then sort of took that back a step and just wanted to make sure that that scenario was absolutely correct. So the first stage in our process we call touch points or scenario building. And this is very much about creating a story that is accurate for the user. And it really is kind of like back of a napkin type stuff. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a big piece of creative writing. This is literally about saying what are the steps in the process that the user is going to expect to go through. So the first step is they're going to need to go to a menu screen. And literally just by sort of identifying that and thinking about that, we're thinking, well, you know, do you want a history of the searches that you know that you might have had previously? Do you want access to your library? What's the user actually going to do? You know, it's not just literally put yourself in your customer's shoes and have a little think about what they're going to do at that point. Then obviously we're going to go to the, you know, sort of camera screen. That's pretty much, I don't think there's much you can do with that with Windows Phone in terms of sort of changing the actual sort of taking the picture experience. Then we're kind of working around to like a preview. We weren't sure about like preview, whether you'd want to sort of preview the picture you've taken and say, yes, I want to actually use this. And later on we kind of thought, well, that might be something that you would turn off in the settings of the application, but it's in there for the purpose of the demo. Then there would be a matching process. The matching process you saw in that demo, and by the way, I have got a phone with me, which Cortexica have kindly loaned me, and I've got the app running on it. So if anyone wants to sort of play around with it, you're welcome to do so afterwards. So with that sort of matching process in the demo, the reason that actually took a bit of time was the way that we sort of built the animations in Blend, and it's actually fairly instant, so that was a bit of a error on our behalf. We wouldn't, typically as designers, we wanted to put a little bit of sweet animation in there, and it actually sort of slowed down the demo a little bit, and that's actually been speeded up. And then finally, the search results, and the simplest way to do that was to sort of go after Bing, and we just wanted to make sure that that screen was formatted and looked as nice as it actually could. So the next step for us is to then work that up as wireframes, because now we've identified every single sort of node in the experience. And this might seem quite simple, but it is a very sort of simple process that we go through, and we use these steps not on a sort of simple demo like this, but we use exactly the same steps when we're working on a Silverlight application for Capita that's going to be deployed to, you know, all these schools and stuff. So the process is always the same. I'm just trying to give you some sort of takeaways in terms of the process and approach that you can take towards designing and adding design and sort of user experience to your apps. So these are essentially are the touch points that we've just identified in the last step, and we've worked them up in wireframes. You can use sort of wireframing tools like Balsamic. You can use Sketchflow. We've played around with Sketchflow. As designers, we found it a little bit cumbersome. It's a little bit slow. Initially, we were like really, really excited about it, and then we sort of thought, well, as designers, if we just want to sketch a box, we just want to sketch a box. We don't want to know, is it a list box, is it a text box? We don't necessarily understand all that stuff. We just want to sketch something down really quickly. And the purpose of each of these screens is to get the content accurate. They're not pixel perfect. We're not putting anything in there that's not going to be in the final design. We're just putting the content on each screen so we know what's on there and what we need to lay out. So we do our wireframes in Illustrator. That's Adobe Illustrator is a tool that we're familiar with. We can work really quickly in that tool. And like I say, you can see we've got the kind of like history of searches. You go through to like the camera screen. We've still got that preview screen in there. We've got the matching screen, and then we've got the search results. And then the next step for us is to take that through to concept. And like I say, all the time, at every stage, the developer, designer, and the customer are involved. So it's a constant ongoing conversation, and we have constant feedback. And then when we get to this concept stage, we're still working in Photoshop. We're not sort of working in Blend yet. This is where we can be most creative. This is where we can make mistakes and get to the result that we want and get the application looking as perfect as we want. And it's quick and it's easy for us. And we can get, you know, effectively, we've only probably spent a few days on this project in terms of the design. Now, the guys at Cortexica that did the development have obviously put more hours into it than that. But it's a very quick turnaround project for us. So the idea is to get these concepts across nice and quickly so we can get customer feedback into that, we can get sign-off, and then we can start building. And that's just a sort of close-up on the screens. We thought, initially, we wanted to do a version of the app that was sort of just very Metro-styled, and we wanted to do a version that was a little bit more customised. We sort of run short of time, and it really is a bit of a research project for us, so they're always hard to fit in anyway. And so we eventually went with this kind of like photo studio type approach, really just to see what sort of customization we could get into the application. So that's the final concept. And then the next phase for us is to pick up Blend, which, I mean, we're already familiar with Blend because we've done work in Surface. We've done sort of Silverlight applications. We've done WPF applications. So we're already working in that environment. Does everyone here use Blend or has used Blend? How many people have used Blend? About half. Okay. So Blend is our designer tool that sits alongside Visual Studio. And I've just screen captured this very quickly so you can get an idea of how it looks for us and how we work from the application. It's a really dark UI because it's for designers and that's what designers want apparently. And that's probably one of the main ways it looks different for Visual Studio to me. But there's a little bit of a barrier to entry for designers to get their head around Blend because all these kind of sort of the layout's slightly different from other applications we might have used like Flash, and there is a bit of a learning curve, but we've got scripts of it fairly quickly and we work in it all the time now. And as far as Windows Phone 7 is concerned, we've found it to be really stable. So with some of the sort of earlier versions of Blend and other applications and software that we've worked on, we found Blend to be quite unstable, and often solutions don't actually build for us. So we'll like open a Silverlight application, it doesn't build in Blend, so Ben will begrudgingly spend time in Visual Studio and I'll take the mick out of him because he's using Visual Studio and I don't think he should be as a designer. You can see it works pretty well, and it's been really simple for us to actually sort of skin this app. The emulators worked really well for us. We didn't have a device during the process of sort of testing and designing it, which was a bit of a hurdle. Like I say, I've got one now, and you can see the app running on it. But like I say, you can see it works pretty well. It builds pretty well. It's been stable for us. And I think Ben would say that the whole process has been really quite smooth. So I thought I'd give you a couple of learning points that we found from the experience of working on this application. So I said to Ben, what are some of the problems that you've come across, things to be aware of? The first thing he said was one of the things that was really critical from a sort of design perspective was to download the UI design guide. I don't know if you guys have sort of all downloaded that. I don't have the link for it here, but I'm sure we can find it. But there's a UI Metro UI design guide that Microsoft make available. It's like a 100-page PDF. Download it, have a skim through it, try and get a feel for sort of how the layout of the apps should be and the guidelines that you should be working to. The other thing I'd recommend you download is the PSD templates that are available from the same place. We found them really useful, and they've got some quite good sort of hidden detail in them, in the sense of where there's buttons in the PSD templates, there's actually sort of hit states behind them and stuff like that. So there's some really good guidance in there that made it really easy and quick for us to get on with the UI. Like I say, we drifted a little bit away from the Metro guidelines, but it was really part of the exercise to see how we could sort of push the boundaries a little bit and come up with something a little bit more custom. So some of the problems Ben came across: couldn't get objects to follow on a path when he was animating them, couldn't make a clipping path with rounding corners, couldn't style the camera control at all, and wasn't able to use effects like drop shadows, all the sort of bitmap effects and stuff. So just some stuff to maybe if you're working with other designers, they might jump in and think, oh, we can do some drop shadow and stuff, but that stuff's not going to work, so you can save yourself some trouble there. Like I said, the API is available. If you send an email to api@cortexcode.com, I think the guy that's probably responsible for that is called Jeff or Marek, spelled M-A-R-E-K. The API is there. You can start using the Visual Search API straight away. They really, really want... what those guys do really well is Visual Search. And what they want to be is better than Google Goggles. And what they want you guys to do is come up with cool ways to use that. You can get going on that straight away. And until you've actually got something that's successfully making a lot of money, I don't think there'll really be any sort of charges and stuff to use that. That's about 20 minutes. So in summary, hopefully we've got a bit better understanding of brand, experience design and partnerships. The last thing I'd say is let's talk. This is our sort of first experience with Windows Phone. We've got a good relationship with the guys at Cortexica. We'd love to develop some products and stuff. So if any of you guys have got ideas or you sort of want to talk about like working with us on products, we'd be really open to that, and I'd love it if you'd come and have a chat with me. And if you just want to play around with the phone, that's cool as well. So that's me done, really. So thanks very much.